So that's what we totally start. Hey everyone, this is John.
This is Wes.
And this is Ryan.
And this is the Nintendo Show, episode 78 of the best damn Nintendo podcast
78?
On the
8th.
Yes, indeed.
What have we done with
you
our lives?
You are amazed every time I
what
say the number.
What have we done with our lives?
You need to start saying, like, lower numbers.
Go on, we'll get the Nintendo Show number 42.
Or just say something, or episode ramen noodle.
What? They're already at the college student phase.
This is the official. This is the official episode for April, not May.
April
or Mayprol, but April, 2017.
John, it doesn't work like that. You can't do that like lunch and breakfast, and you have brunch. Like you can't do that months. Like
I feel like I can.
Mayprol.
That is a great Simpsons joke, where they buy budget calendars and it says Smarch.
It was like lousy Smarch weather.
That's good. But we're going to talk about some news and new releases and preview some games coming out in the month of May. So let's just go ahead and get things started before things get too weird.
That doesn't take long for things to get too weird with us.
So we do have a little bit of news, not too much to get to, and some rumors. There's a rumor going around, and this rumor is coming from a Eurogamer, who's been a pretty reliable source for rumors in the past. The rumor is that Nintendo has begun production of the Super Nintendo Classic Edition.
I heard that. I mean, I heard that this is like a rumor that everyone's speculating because they basically said straight up they're not going to do any more of these Nintendo classic consoles.
Right.
Everyone's like, well, what's the next thing that they're going to do?
Right, which baffled everyone when they said, hey, we're not going to do this.
We don't want to print money.
Right. We don't. And then me and Wes talked about this a little bit on the mini show when we talked about the Nintendo Direct because I think general consensus is that NES Classic Edition ended because they need to use those resources to make more Switches. And you can either make these $300 systems where people are likely to buy a game and continue to buy games, or you can make this $60 system, which a lot of people will buy, but it's closed. Once they buy that piece of hardware, there's no other way to monetize.
Well, and also they've shown that like the going rate for them is like close to $200.
Yeah.
So whenever they want to get back into this, they can. When they've actually like, I don't know, hit steady production on the Switch, then they can just go back and make another round of them and again just cut a check.
Wouldn't that be so evil though? Like if like they treat it like the Disney vault where it's like, and here's the NES Classic again.
Well, think of how many fucking like resource management RPGs they're literally playing one themselves.
Yeah.
With their full consoles.
It is a bummer for everyone who wasn't able to get one. Maybe we see this thing resurface. Maybe we see a Super Nintendo Classic Edition. And if we do see one, it'll probably be a similar setup to the NES Classic, where it's just plug and play, preloaded games. I doubt you'll be able to download more games. It'll just be like a closed system. These are the things you get.
Yeah, which is fine.
And we talked about like last summer when they announced the NES Classic. We talked a bunch about what Super Nintendo games we'd like to see on there.
Yeah,
so, you know, we will make a whole other list. But, I mean, clearly Contra 3.
I mean, of course. Well, the Mario games, mm-hmm. I don't know if they... The thing is, do you think they get Mario All-Star or not?
I think they probably do Super Mario World.
They could probably do the RPG if they wanted. Since, again, this is all pure Mario stuff. I feel like they can just basically throw in...
They better do the friggin' RPG. That thing is amazing.
Yeah, Mario RPG. That's up next to talk about on the Super Nintendo Show in May. So yeah, that'll be a fun one.
They would be insulting if they didn't give you Donkey Kong.
Yeah, Donkey Kong Country, maybe even 1, 2, and 3. All in there, but it's going to be interesting
with
to
see. With 2 being the best one.
Sure. It's going to be interesting to see what if they do this and how they're going to handle the library, because you do have such a glut of RPGs. Do they really put all these really lengthy games?
Just Secret of Mana.
just
that's
see,
it.
Secret of Mana, Secret of Mana, 2 controllers. You can't even play with the 3 people. No. But anyway, Final Fight, probably some of the Final Fights. But just a couple of more things to get into. Square Enix went ahead and reconfirmed that Dragon Quest XI is indeed coming to Switch, which is something we already knew. And most of the other news actually is Nintendo Direct stuff and sales data, which we already talked about the Nintendo Direct stuff. We never really talk about sales data. The Switch is doing well. There, that's the sales data for everybody. Oh, the other fun thing is that Breath of the Wild, as of a couple weeks ago, had a 102% attach rate to the Switch, which means more people own the Switch version of Breath of the Wild than there are Switches.
That's impressive.
In existence, yeah.
How?
special edition. People bought a collector's edition, never want to open it, kind of thing.
I would do it.
But yeah, it's fun. But we addressed a lot of the Nintendo Direct stuff, and I think we came off as a little bit salty. Like, we were mad about a lot of things.
We were angry about, I mean...
We were mad about, like, Amiibo and DLC.
That's the thing when it comes to talking about things like this. You look at it from a very intellectual, analytical point, but like, oh yeah, we're doing this and this. I'm just full of rage.
And you were a bad influence, because I was, like, abnormally angry about things.
How dare they have DLC for this game? Those motherfuckers.
But I think the big thing to take away from the Nintendo Direct is that there is going to be stuff to play on both Switch and 3DS for the months of May, June, and July. And then, you know, we got E3 in June, so we'll see what's going on beyond that.
I remember that conversation. You guys are pretty cynical.
Yeah, we were.
I think you need to approach it from the naivety of Nintendo. They don't even know what they're doing.
People are going to love Monopoly. This is going to be great.
This is fantastic.
I mean, I played it as a kid on a board, but now...
I listened to a few Nintendo podcasts, and I've heard, like, one person who's genuinely excited for Monopoly on Switch, which they're fucking crazy.
Yeah, that man's insane.
But...
That right there will lose him viewers.
Well, here's the thing.
Oh, this guy likes Monopoly? Oh!
I feel like there's this growing trend now. I mean, even to the point where, like, the Game Developer Conference has their segment for it, where there's a big thing about people getting back into, like, what they call adult tabletop games.
Hmm.
And Monopoly is just a shit way to do that. There's a lot of people that want to play... Like, I've been playing this game called Arkham Horror, which is a really complex adult tabletop game that's all built around the Lovecraft world. It's all about summoning elder gods and things like that. And it's a really, really fun group experience. And Monopoly has this reputation as being the least fun board game you can play because it's vindictive, it's spiteful.
And it takes forever.
Not fun.
It's 4 a.m. in the morning, Grandma. You win.
Precisely.
I'm sorry for quoting Dane Cook, guys.
You know, Dane Cook, we're going to take a tangent here about Dane Cook.
Are we going to discuss Dane Cook here?
It's totally fine. That's all the news. That's everything.
No, Dane Cook's early stand-up is really fine. There's a lot of guys that...
Early Dane Cook.
Yeah, yeah.
Because later Dane Cook, he just becomes a giant tool.
Like, I think a lot of Dane Cook, especially his early comedy, is very physical. It's very high energy.
Yeah.
Which is fun to watch. Mm-hmm. To watch someone tell jokes and act like a jackass.
Yeah, I remember, it was probably like 15 years ago, probably like 10 to 12 years ago, I saw him do stand-up live.
Oh, yeah?
And it was at the Improv here in Orlando, and this was kind of right when he was peaking. He was really hitting it big, and he is, for starters, playing a venue that is way too small for him at that time. The Improv does not see a lot of people, and it's just a traditional stand-up club, to the point where he did... I think 4 nights in a row, like a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and every single show, he tacked on 2 extra shows.
Hmm.
So I saw his show where he took the stage at 1:30 in the morning.
Oh, wow.
Ooh. And he was still fucking amped. And he stayed 45 minutes past his set.
Goddamn. Like,
he was really good at it all.
So like, much cocaine.
I was about to say, yeah. It's the crack.
It's like when people say Meat Loaf sucks, but then you go see him live and he's one of the best singers. Or he's like one of the best presenters and performers you've ever seen on a stage. It's like...
The guy from Fight Club sings?
You didn't know that? you're just joshing.
I'm just joshing.
Just joshing.
I'm such a prankster.
No, I mean, we don't have to talk about Dane Cook. But yeah, really, Dane Cook, is his material is really, really funny. And yeah, he's actually... used to be a really good performer. I don't know what he's doing now.
Hmm.
He's probably dead.
He's probably dead.
Probably.
But I think it's a good place to take a break. Let's take a break and come back with some new releases.
Yeah, that's not bad.
I do have 2 new releases and one sort of new release that we absolutely have to talk about. But I'm going to start off with Bye Bye Box Boy, which came out on the 3DS. I didn't write down the release date. It was earlier in the month after the Nintendo Direct. And we talked a little bit about this one on the mini show. If you're not familiar with the basic mechanics of Box Boy, we've talked about Box Boy 1 and Box Boy 2 on the show before. You're a little box dude, it's a 2D puzzle platformer. You spawn boxes out of your body in order to like create a staircase to work your way up a cliff or create a bridge to make your way across a gap.
How interesting.
Yeah, it's a fun
pretty
little
simplistic.
Game.
So you can fill a pit with your own corpses just to create a bridge.
It's effectively accurate. Box Boy 3, which is this one, is actually a step back in terms of complexity from Box Boy 2, in which you could actually spawn two sets of, or two groupings of boxes at one time. In Box Boy 1 and Box Boy 3, you can spawn one group of boxes, and if you try to create another group, the original will disappear. So, I mean, in Box Boy 2, it flirted with this level of complexity that bordered on obtuse because they would have, like, bonuses or solutions to puzzles that would require these really outrageous shapes for both sets of boxes. And you're basically, like, staring up a cliff at 50 stories, so like, how the fuck do I get up there? And you have to create these weird Z-shaped things to pull it off. I don't know, like, I liked Box Boy 2 just fine. But I do like the kind of throwback to the more simpler mechanics from in Box Boy 1 and Box Boy 3.
You're just lazy.
Yeah, at times. Like, I don't want to have to think about it too much.
I mean, come on. Sometimes, you know, just...
We say just about every episode, John, you're casual. You're too casual a gamer.
I flew through the puzzles in Box Boy 3 pretty quickly. I think it like maybe took 5 or 6 hours to play from start to finish. But it had... like really refined ideas like from Box Boy 1 with all the different things that you're able to do with the boxes and snaking and grappling onto cliffs and stuff. And it also had some really cool new ideas that, I mean, because the ideas were so cool, I didn't really mind that it was on the easy side. So basically you got to have three worlds. There's three different planets that you go to, all with a box-based economy for some reason. But on every planet there are 4, maybe 5 worlds, and the last world set of stages always introduces like this these one stage only mechanics. So, for example, on the first planet, on the very last stage, basically, I suppose the boss stage of that planet, you have these boxes that when you spawn out a group of boxes, they turn into rockets and they fly upwards, and that they use that to like hit switches that are above you that you normally couldn't reach. Or there's another one where it gives you like a teleport box where you can spawn out a group of boxes, throw in a direction, and then you're able to teleport from your location to like the furthest box out. And these are really cool little mechanics, and I think it makes it's quite special because it's only good for that one level, that one group of stages, and there's maybe 20 or 30 puzzles that you got to work through with this one new mechanic. Oh, and then there's, I think the third one is like 0G boxes or something like that. I can't quite remember. It's been a couple weeks since I played this game. But this is a fun little game for a mere $5. A nice. Paltry $5. Yeah, this one's definitely worth a shot.
Is it really like segmented in levels?
Yeah.
Is it literally like level 1-1, level 1-2, etc.?
Well, it'll be like
world 1, and then you accomplish tasks with that?
Yeah, and within world 1, there are 5... maybe 6 stages, and then within each stage, it's not quite as segmented, but it's like, here's your first obstacle, here's your second obstacle, here's your third, and there's like maybe 3 or 4 obstacles within each stage. You don't really do any backtracking. If you like fail or you kill yourself or you need to like retry, it'll start you over from your checkpoint, which is when you just completed the first puzzle or the second puzzle. So it makes for really good portable play because you don't really have to worry about ever backtracking or redoing things.
Are the controls really simple?
Yeah. Yeah, it's 3DS, you use your D-pad to move, and then you have a jump button, then you have a button to start making your boxes. So
that's pretty cool.
Pretty easy stuff. The other game that I've been playing, this was on the Wii U. It's a Wii U game. Shovel Knight Spectre of Torment is out.
I've been waiting to hear about this.
Yeah, this
I don't have Shovel Knight.
Oh, you should.
I should just get it.
Shovel Knight's
really good. I can download it from my PS4. I really just need to do it.
Totally worth it.
Sorry for the Pikachu.
No, that's okay. This one, of course, developed by Yacht Club Games, is the latest expansion to Shovel Knight. This one actually came out on the Switch in March. It came out on the Switch first, and then became a free update for everywhere else in April. I think April 21st it went live. But you know how, like, in the Plague Knight? Plague Knight's kind of a parallel story.
Yeah, he throws little, like, bombs.
Yeah, Plague Knight... Well, Plague Knight kind of limits your mobility even more than Shovel Knight, because Plague Knight, you're giving yourself a double jump by, like, throwing a bomb and, like, detonating yourself in the air. And you don't nearly jump as high or as far. You move a little bit slower than Shovel Knight. But Plague Knight, it was kind of funny because as you're moving throughout the world, you actually see Shovel Knight as well. And you're having these sort of parallel adventures. And then when you actually play your own stage as Plague Knight, at the end you fight Shovel Knight. It's pretty cool. But in Spectre of Torment, you play Spectre Knight, and it's actually like a prequel to Shovel Knight. So Spectre Knight is tasked with putting together the Order of No Quarter, and you go around and you fight all the different knights, and then by defeating them, you're convincing them to join up with this villainous group.
Oh, cool.
But Plague Knight has that inhibited mobility. Spectre Knight actually goes in the opposite direction, where he's a bit more mobile than Shovel Knight. He's got things like a wall run. And I think he probably jumps pretty similarly and moves pretty similarly to Shovel Knight. But what he does have is this aerial slash. So when you do a jump attack, you just do like a jump slash with your scythe. But if there is an enemy in close proximity, it will have like a slash line going through the enemy, indicating that when you attack, you will actually rocket yourself through the enemy in the direction that the slash line indicates. And the direction that line is going to be contingent on your position relative to the enemy. If you are above the enemy and moving to the right, the slash line is going to take you down to the right. If you are below the enemy moving to the left, that slash line is going to take you upwards and to the left. And
so the path that you take is dictated by your opponent?
Right. Right. Or your position to the opponent. So okay. what this does is, well, not only are there like opponents, but they're just little environmental cues, like, hey, you can slash through this. So there'll be like an orb, but like at the bottom of a cliff, and it'll indicate like if you jump and slash through this orb, it will vault you up to the top of the cliff.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not only using this attack to do damage to enemies, but you're also using it for platforming.
Mm-hmm.
And there are several platforming challenges throughout the game where you have to be really mindful of your position, where there'll be like three little orbs that you can slash through that take you over this pit from like the edge of a cliff to a ladder. And you got to vault yourself across all three in order to get to the ladder. However, because there's a pit below you, you're always having to remember that in order to slash upwards, you're going to have to be below that orb object so that you're slashing up. And if you're above it and you slash too soon, it's just going to vault you down to the bottom of the pit. So there's this risk reward to it where, you know, you have to be mindful that you always have to let yourself sort of drop down further into the pit before you try to rescue yourself.
Huh.
It makes this like this really tense platform that feels really great when you pull it off.
Sounds like the Lucas, being good with Lucas and Brawl.
Oh yeah, with like the PK Thunder.
Yeah, it's like you have to mm-hmm. put the little thing behind you, and you have to put it in just the right place to get the right charge in the right direction.
Yeah,
yeah, actually, yeah.
You gotta milk as you're slow, and as you're increasing your own fall, you have to kind of catch yourself with it.
Mm-hmm. So like Shovel Knight, just playing as regular Shovel Knight, does have like some acrobatic moments to it where you like have to shovel hop across things, but this one has a much more acrobatic feel to it, which is really cool. Oh, and you can still like one of the keys to combat playing a Shovel Knight is just getting on top of your enemy's head and hopping on them over and over again. And you can still sort of do that head hopping with Spectre Knight, but you just have to keep in mind that when you, like if it's a big boss character, if you slash down into him, it's going to vault you backwards, and you just keep on like vaulting down to him to keep on slashing.
You can kind of chain that together over and over.
Right. Right. Cool. You don't get a world map in Spectre of Torment. You just get this stage select, which is effectively the same thing, except it doesn't like require you to fight certain bosses in a certain order. So in Shovel Knight, you like have your first three set of bosses and the next three set of bosses, and you have to defeat the first three in order to get to the next three. And this one, you can play them in any order you feel like. But that also kind of means that there's no sort of difficulty curve. like the bosses aren't going to get harder as you go. It's just always like these are the bosses and they have the same level of difficulty because they don't know what order you're going to be playing them in. And the bosses really aren't particularly difficult either because of how mobile Spectre Knight is. It's much easier to have these acrobatic slashes down into enemies than it was with Shovel Knight to just camp on top of their heads. There's also these interstitial stages, which are pretty cool. It has like this, the sepia tone, because these are like flashbacks within this flashback sort
to
of game.
To his time in the war.
Right, right. there's flashbacks in this backstory. But there's like, these take place before Spectre Knight was actually Spectre Knight, because Spectre Knight is dead, I suppose.
He's a Spectre.
Yeah. But this was before he became Spectre Knight, and he is, like, robbing castles with this buddy of his. And because he's not Spectre Knight yet, you don't really have that slash attack. But what they do is, in instances where there's a pit too far to get over, your buddy will jump out and grab onto something, like, reach his hand out, and you're basically using the same mechanics. It just gives it a different facelift, which is cool, because it gives the game a different tone through these sections. But these are kind of surprise sections. I think they pop up after you defeat every two or three bosses. And these are great areas to collect a ton of money. You collect a ton of money in this stage. There's also a ton of other things to collect in all of the boss stages. There's HP and MP expansions. If you miss those, actually, you can, in your hub world, you can just buy them, like, for 4,000 money. You can just purchase the thing that you miss. There's also little skulls that you collect that you use to purchase side skills. Money is used to do things like power up your side skills that each have, like, an expansion to them, or a one level up that you can do to make them more effective. There's different armors you can buy that hold different effects. There's one armor that allows you to grind on spikes, or so the description says. I haven't really figured out how to do it yet. But
kinky.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty cool because spikes are usually an instant
kinky.
Death. Yeah.
Kinky.
I don't know why, but I'm going to let you have that one.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Yeah. Each stage has a little tracker to show you've collected, so if you want to be the 100% completionist, makes it pretty easy to do that. But this is a really fun update. It's free if you already own it, so there's no reason not to play it. It's a very cool game. The base price of the game did increase. I'm not exactly sure when this happened, but Shovel Knight, just as a complete package, is now like $25 as opposed to $20. So not really that big a deal. It's $5.
Those sons of bitches.
Yeah.
They're now charging us for the DLC.
Trying to make money.
It makes me sad because I haven't bought the game yet.
That's all right. It's $5. What are you going to do with that $5?
Stop
being cheap. Stop being so cheap. The last game that we have to talk about, not really a new release, not on a current Nintendo system either, but StarCraft is free.
Oh god.
Did you guys, like, Wes, I was talking to you about it earlier, Ryan, did you notice that StarCraft is now free through, like, you can just go to Blizzard's website and download StarCraft for free?
I didn't know that, no. I'm on Battle.net all the time. I didn't see them.
Do it tonight.
It's pretty fucking cool. And
that is awesome.
Super easy, you just download it and it goes. It's StarCraft and Brood Wars, so you get all the campaigns associated with that.
And when StarCraft came out when I was younger, I didn't appreciate campaign.
No?
But now that I'm older and can really wrap my head around what's going on and everything like that, I think I'm going to enjoy that.
I mean,
because I always just play Skirmish mode and just be like, alright.
Well, I mean, campaigns are always just, I feel like in these games, just tutorials for, like, playing online and playing Skirmish modes, which I think, like, online play is intact. So I'm pretty sure that the online play is still intact, which is awesome. But this is them kind of vamping for...
if you want to go online and, you know, hate your life for hours.
Right, if you want to
play
lose,
this, you're people who've played hours and hours of this game.
If you want to lose and lose hard, you play StarCraft online.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I think we might have talked about this not too long ago. Like, there's a sort of enjoyable spectator aspect to watching this, like, really high-level play.
Yeah, yeah.
Of these types of games.
Oh, yeah. The World Championship for StarCraft is gross to watch. Those big tournaments and everything. It's crazy the amount of strategy that I didn't realize was in the game.
Yeah, well, also, and it's just... I mean, like, watching them do what they do with, their insanely high, like, 200, 300 APM. You know, it's... They can command this army so much better than you ever could. It's really crazy. they're constantly doing like little juggling tactics, you know, how it's sort of like they'll intentionally destroy, like if a Zerg will intentionally destroy the drones to free up more larvae to do something with those. And it's just, I don't know, just all this tricky little shit. Like watching Terran use their little medevacs and just constantly harass opponents that have twice the army they do, but they're just constantly needling them and getting into their supply line. And it's something you do at the 6-minute mark is what decides a game that ends up being a 24-minute slugfest. It's just because you were able to disrupt their timing on getting a third base or something like that. Like it's so much fascinating strategy that I played a ton of StarCraft II. I played a lot of it, that I just got to the point where I would just rather watch people that are good at it. Yeah. You know, it's like I don't want to go to the Y and play basketball. I just kind of want to watch people that are good at basketball play basketball.
While I'm dipping my Lay's potato chips into mayonnaise and just...
That sounds just vile.
And it's what makes you happy. It's the utility that you derive from.
That is
repugnant,
sir.
Yeah, just saying. Yeah, if you slather in mayonnaise all over your
just
chips...
Just washing this.
So mayonnaise is gross.
Mayonnaise... Probably one of the worst condiments.
Yeah, it's I think mostly rotten eggs. I think it's rotten eggs and like sour milk.
And you know, people, look, I hear a lot about this work lately. People say, like, oh, I just discovered fry sauce, and it's ketchup and mayonnaise mixed together.
Fuck yourself.
Just the two worst condiments ever.
Don't you dare talk about bad ketchup.
Be an adult to get some barbecue sauce.
I swear.
I agree with that. This is some fucking barbecue sauce.
Yeah. Everything else is just the ugly step cousin.
Steak sauce, even. Who cares?
Jared. Because,
yeah.
God, don't be disgusting.
Ketchup is great. I mean, it's not like I put it on steak or anything like that. No, you're going to need some nice steak sauce for that.
Uh-huh.
No, you don't even do that, though.
But,
yeah. Fries, you got to say ketchup and fries here.
Salt, pepper, and then you cook it. You sear it on butter. That's all you need to do with a good steak.
Maybe a little mashed potatoes, too.
Mashed
potatoes. Mashed potatoes on your fork and then boom, right?
Steak sauce should go with the mashed potatoes.
Ooh.
Is what I think.
That's a good
Actually, when I eat french fries, my go-to condiment for french fries is steak sauce. I would never actually eat steak sauce with steak.
I find, like, especially when you're getting a steak from a restaurant, it's seasoned enough as is.
Yeah.
And then you just go ahead and dump some more vinegar on it. What are you doing?
I saw the face of God the other day. I went and ate at Ruth's Chris.
Mm-hmm.
That restaurant is...
That place.
It's steakhouse. There's
my steak,
literally like 100 yards from my office.
My steak was $40.
Oh my god.
And my two sides were $9 a piece.
Holy shit.
But dear God, that was the best thing ever.
You can't afford
You
can't afford $25 shovel night.
Yeah, I didn't pay for that meal. But oh my god, that was heavenly.
Mm.
That was such a good steak.
You want to plug the restaurant again?
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay.
You didn't get the first time.
Jimmy John's.
Dairy Queen.
Your $40 steak at Jimmy John's. No, yeah. I've never been to Roots, Chris, but they are like supposed to be top shelf.
Oh my god, it was... Oh, I wept. Just openly wept. People were walking by watching me at the table just crying as I'm eating the steak.
I mean, that's fine.
It was great.
You were wrecked, too, and you usually cry when you have a boner.
Well, you know. It was bugging the people three tables down.
So StarCraft is a video game. I've blown through a lot of the Terran campaign already because it's the first recommended one. I'm just kind of playing in order here. But do you guys like have a when you would play? Do you have a favorite like go to?
Protoss.
Oh, easily Terran.
Oh, yeah.
Always Terran.
Okay, suck.
I love Terran because they're just so good at turtling up and creating these impenetrable defenses.
Well, I was talking to someone that was like. A diehard Zerg fan, and they—that was their point about what it's like to be Terran. Is that you always have the answer? You have the B minus at everything in your Marines.
Yeah,
because they're not—you know—they're not the toughest thing in the world, but they're modestly priced. They have range. They do a ton of damage. You have stem packs.
Mm-hmm.
You've got all of these other ways that you can strengthen them, and you got fucking medevacs. Again, a lot of what I'm talking about is StarCraft II. I didn't play much of the original StarCraft. I know they have a lot of similar units.
Mm-hmm.
I think they don't have
They don't have the medics.
Yeah.
So stim packs are a bit more of a risk when you're using.
Yeah, you're gonna.
But yeah, like it's so easy to just build up just a ton of Marines and go just bug people, and then while they're fighting off your huge wave of Marines, you just build another one.
Yeah. In high school, we always like hop on network and we played like a skirmish map. I forget what the name of it was, but it was on Brood. Mm-hmm. But all it was like one center island, and then it had bridges off to, was that 3-6 other islands, just all around it. Mm-hmm. And on each one, there was a small deposit of, you know, what was it, gas and minerals?
Yeah,
vespine gas.
Except they're huge. Like, you could sit there for, like, an hour and you still won't deplete it. Like, it was just a massive thing, and it was always right behind your thing. So the point of these maps were just to, like, just keep spitting stuff out at a ridiculously fast pace.
Yeah.
And just having an almost unlimited supply of units and resources. Mm-hmm. So eventually, you always end up coming down to giant fights of, what was it, the Protoss air carrier with the little ships that come out.
Mm.
It's like 8 of those against 8 of the other people, and like a giant army that takes up a whole bridge. Like, it just became pure nonsense, and it was wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, the game has always been very well balanced between all
except
three
that
races.
Map.
Well, you know. They sometimes just gotta fuck around.
That was great. That was such a good map.
My favorite thing about it is that there's always this interesting rock, paper, scissor dynamic to virtually every fucking element of the way that the three races interact.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you were actually talking about how it's like, oh, you have a cap 200 units, and then your whole thing gets slaughtered, and then you're just like, damn, I got a new one. Really, they're the slowest to respawn units. I mean, it kind of depends on how many barracks you build or whatever it is that you're trying to generate. But at the same time, a Zerg can basically take every single bit of larva it has and then create the most ungodly powerful thing. Ultralisks. They can just basically out of nowhere decide, I'm going to intentionally rush all of my drones into my opponent, kill all my drones, I don't care. Because I want to make a fuck ton of ultralisks that are going to steamroll you.
Mm.
You know, that's a crazy strategy they can do. And they can also, like, just on a dime transition from doing, say, an ultralisk attack into an all-air attack. They could go mutalisks out of nowhere. And then maybe your entire strategy was, like, gotta worry about these fucking ultralisks. And now I'm suddenly being bombarded with all... This is a strategy that's killed me multiple times. I hate it. Where it's, like, they can on a dime transition their entire strategy to something else, and then you're totally caught off guard because your whole strategy is being built around, oh my god, I need Thors. I really need Thors right now. I mean, that's just one area. It's like the mobility of bases. Like, Terran's got the upper hand there. Terran has the most mobile bases.
Yeah, just everything just up and leave.
Yeah, and then Protoss can rapid build everywhere. Oh, okay.
You hit that desperation point where you're just, you know, like, fuck, I'm going to lose anyways. Just throw buildings at them. I'm going to clutter your vision. You can't see shit.
Or, like, a good base race. If it ends up being the sort of thing where, you know, you're out of position and they're going to ram their whole armada down your throat, but you're like, well, I can still take out their shit because they're not even guarding their base at this point. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to lift up one barracks and one command center, and I'm going to hide them at the corners of the map.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll never get me. And then I will just destroy them, and then whatever is left of my army will face off with whatever is left of their army, and there's a good chance I can win this war by attrition. Where all I need to do is basically just keep, you know, a couple of my SCVs alive, and I've done this. This is a strategy. I've won like 45-minute long games doing this shit. And this is that. Those are really satisfying wins when you think when your opponent thinks like they've got the battering ram that's going to do you in, and then you just totally fuck them over. They hate you so much. And it's like a 45-minute commitment. It's those fights where it's over in like 12 minutes where it's just like done. You're like, all right, it's fine. I can take a win or a loss like that, and it's cool. 45 minutes, I'm ready to punch somebody. Like, that sucks. That's, you don't want to lose that.
Well, I've actually been approaching the game very differently than I had in the past because, you know, I played this game like back in the late 90s or early 2000s.
Yeah.
It was very much, okay, I'm going to build my base very precisely. I'm going to gather these resources. When I'm done with these resources, I'm going to expand out and gather more resources over here. I'm going to make sure I have everything researched.
Roll off my second base.
Right, but before I even go out and attempt to take out the enemy. Whereas in this one, it's like...
Research orbitable commands.
Right.
View the whole map. No one ever's going to sneak by me.
Whereas this time around, it's like, fuck it. I know exactly what's like... I've seen their base. I know exactly what's
there. Proxy Merrick. You see pros do that shit all the time. That's one of my favorite things. Like, you know, like, I've seen a lot of like top level ones where it comes down to, say, Terran and Protoss. I mean, I'm gushing about Terran. I do love Terran.
Me too.
They do this thing where they like have proxy bases. Mm-hmm. And you see it all the time where, you know, you're supposed to do your good job of being a scout, but then they send one of their SCVs off. They spot where their opponent is, or they have a general idea where their opponent is, and they're like, all right, this is a spot where they're probably not going to check. They're probably going to just... And you see them, they send their drone to scout, and it just misses seeing the barracks right there. You know, and they're coming in here, and then you see the terror in their face when they get into your base, and they're like, oh my god, he hasn't done anything. He's got a proxy there, and then their marines are running in, blowing down all of their drones. It's just like, and you see, like, these guys are like cold, they have fucking ice water running through their veins, and you just see them as it's happening, and they're just like, internally raging. They're so angry. It's like they just want to like punch the monitor or something. It's like, oh, and it's like, this is like so much strategy. It's like losing to a trick play in football. You know, it's like you got duped on the Statue of Liberty player.
they fake the field goal. God damn it.
Like, yeah. Oh, it really is. It's such a fun competitive game. I wish I was better at it. Yeah.
But
I mean,
now you can download StarCraft 1 and. You know, I've just been playing through the campaign, and it's tons of fun. Like, this game is really great.
Well, they do a lot of the, what would you say, superpowered units, right? Don't they? Like, your Raynor, or whatever the guy is.
Oh, sure.
Like,
I mean...
A couple of, like, special hero units.
Yeah.
Which you don't really get to play with much.
And they're not really that much more powerful, I've found, than...
They just got, like, 3 or 4 times more life than they normally do.
Yeah, they got more HP. And then you also got, like, those mission specifics. Like, this unit can't die. So... Unless you're, like, preparing for the final assault, you don't really use them all that much. Except there's one mission in the Terran campaign where you get that General Duke guy, and he's flying around in a big old battle cruiser.
Mm.
So he became, like, the lead unit for my Air Force. And I used a lot of air units to take out the enemy that time. I was like, well, I got this guy with me. He's going to do a lot of damage. But he's so fucking slow. Like, those battle cruisers are so goddamn slow.
Yeah. I mean, they're... again, like, I'm all about the Terran, but they have the most, I think, dynamic and interesting unit composition. I feel like, I take that back. Probably Zerg is actually the most diverse and bizarre and strange. You see all kinds of crazy Zerg players. Protoss is just Protoss.
Yeah.
Ball of Death. They do what they do, and then they have their mothership teleport whenever they really get scared. And they're coming in with those giant fucking things. Man, I don't like Protoss. And Zerg players, I think Zerg players are the most fun to watch, like, in a tournament setting where you're watching the best of the best.
Oh, yeah.
Zerg players, they're just on a totally different... Their mind is geared towards something else that isn't even StarCraft at that point.
Yeah, it's complete gibberish.
Yeah, it's just like they think of themselves as, like, a disease that has to just to spread and destroy and not even try to win, just try to suffocate, I think is what they do. Oh, man.
Yeah, so much fun.
This is a Nintendo game, right?
Yeah, well, it was on the Nintendo 64, yes.
Oh, hey!
There is a Nintendo 64.
Can we talk about Quake? Also on the 64.
We'll get to it.
Yeah,
I'm actually really looking forward to trying StarCraft on the Nintendo 64, because it probably plays like garbage.
Oh.
Like, how is it going to be fun?
Can I issue commands while paused? That's what's going to make or break that game for me, honestly.
Also, the thing with StarCraft is that there are certain things that, maybe they do to, like, balance the game out, but there are certain things that aren't conducive to certain strategic gameplay. Like, the fact that you can only... I don't know if it's... I can't remember if this is when StarCraft 2, but in StarCraft 1, you can only select 12 units at a time. So you're assigning a lot of hotkeys to different teams. So you're assigning teams on the computer, okay, I want this team going here. And I think it does maybe force you to think about attacking in different ways and different directions and things like that, and maybe not building this overwhelming force. But I find, especially when I'm in the campaign mode, when it's Terran versus Terran, because Terrans in the campaign are always just fighting each other, I need a fucking overwhelming force in order to take out these bases, because they're just filled with siege tanks and Goliaths and units that cloak. I can't remember if... I don't think Zerg has anything that cloaks in StarCraft 1. I can't remember if the...
Protoss do.
Protoss.
They
yeah?
do. Okay. It's that weird...
The creep.
It's like a black cloak thing, and they got like a knife or melee.
Is that in Brood Wars?
Wait, I think so. That may be a Brood War. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the... Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Called,
it's
like
the dark...
Oh, the Zealots?
The
Zealot,
Zealots.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Zealots.
And I think the Zealots become Archons or something like that.
Well, there's those, the regular units, and you merge two of them together and become that blue Archon.
Yeah.
And then the regular Zealots, the stealth Zealots become like a red Archon. I forget what those do. They're different.
Yeah.
They do different things. It's been a long time since I played this game.
Oh, rock, paper, scissors. Health is an interesting function that they use, where Protoss are super soft, by health, but have shields. That's
right, that
thing.
Regenerate.
And the shield regenerate.
Yeah.
All of the organic humans don't really regenerate health if you need those medevacs. And then the Zerg just have this inherent regeneration as they are the disease. You know, they're just on their creep, they're going to generate
life. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It's so cool. Yeah, like the creep itself has stealth. You have to actually, if you're trying to...
Oh,
like,
you can bury the units
push,
in it.
Push back someone's creep.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah,
actually,
which is one of the more terrifying things to do.
I think certain Zerg units can just bury themselves anywhere, now that I think about it.
Yeah,
they don't have to be on creep.
They can bury their... They're on creep. I think every unit can bury itself. And then on top of that, they have... What are those things fucking called? These little, like, worm things.
Oh, the hydralisks.
No.
They're tunnels.
They make these tunnel units, basically. It's sort of the equivalent of a shitty medevac drop. Is that you'll take one of those overlords, go in, spew out creep, sneak in something to spawn... I wish I could think of the name of it, but basically it creates a B, in-out tunnel.
Oh, okay.
And then you can just funnel all of your units through it, and before they know it, you're behind enemy lines with your entire fucking army.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
nice.
Makes for some fun play.
But I think we've gone enough about StarCraft for a while here.
Yeah.
I'm actually... When StarCraft 2 came out, my computer couldn't handle it. Now we have a newer laptop. So once I'm done with this, I might jump over to StarCraft 2 because I played a little bit of it, but I didn't get to do it too much.
I think you'll find that it's a really easy thing to latch on to.
Yeah.
I just play AI for a while. The game will tell you how good you are. I mean...
The game will judge you?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you'll start out...
It'll call you noob one of you.
It'll give you, I think, 3 fights to gauge your ability, and then it'll be like, okay, from what we've seen of you, you're built for hard. And then you'll play a fight, and if you win, it'll maybe not push you to very hard, but it'll increase your ability.
Okay.
And it's sort of like this big meter. You kind of get a good sense of where you are on the ladder by how you play in it. So if you're sort of at the very tip of it, that means that you are, you know...
On the tip of hard?
Yeah. Oh, well, like, I forget what the actual term they use it. The hard tip. you're sitting right on a hard tip.
You're sitting right...
Yeah, but like, I mean, at that point, you know, the CPU opponent is intentionally getting to max units they can. They couldn't be better about expanding on bases. They're keeping up with all of their, what do you call them? When you increase abilities, like you increase infantry, attack, or defense. Like they're doing all
research.
They're doing all of the research, expending everything they do just perfect, meaning you have to play just perfect. Mm. And that's really all they do. They just basically... wait until they know they've got enough to beat you, and then that's that.
Right.
So if you wanted to hop in, it'll tell you how good you are. It's straightforward.
Hmm.
You'll get an idea of if you're need more training.
Also out in the month of April here, Lego City Undercover came out for the Switch. Graceful Explosion Machine, which has a great name, came out for the Switch. Mr. Shifty, Wonder Boy, and Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, also all out for
what
the Switch.
What was that?
Graceful Explosion Machine.
What
it's,
on earth is that?
2D space shooter kind of game. Like a Gradius.
That sounds wonderful.
It does sound really cool, and it reviewed pretty well. Well, what a lot of people say is that it's built for high score runs. There's not really a whole lot of replayability in it unless you want to beat high scores, which, yeah, that's exactly what I said. So maybe one day, but right now I got a huge stack of games to get through.
They got to add a music element.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, there's like... No, I'm not like... Not that they're making the songs. You pick the songs and the game is built upon that. Like, there is a great one that I spent... It was simply a shitty Galaga-style game, but it was based around music. So your gun is based on the track itself, and the power-ups you get power the songs.
Huh.
And so it makes the volume of the song, and then you pick the songs you want to play to. So
that's kind of funny.
Yeah.
Well, let's take a quick break, and then come back with some games coming out in May. Alright, so we got 5 games to address here coming out in May. We're not going to read the Nintendo descriptions this time, because...
Aww. off.
Yeah, we need to close it out a little bit early because some of us have work in the morning, apparently.
You guys are slackers.
I don't.
Well, you know, by the end of this week, I won't have a job.
Is it official? Or is it like?
Yeah, we're at like 3 days left.
Huh.
Yeah, it's. Yeah.
Oh, well, well.
5 years with the Radio Shack just down the drain. Just. Who cares? Mm.
I mean, at least it was only five.
At least it was only five. And then, you know, I'm unemployed.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to buy a new car.
Oh, no.
Yeah, my car's not running well at all.
Well, should we start a GoFundMe for you? Have the listeners donate?
The listeners donate for Wesley to buy a car.
Okay, so Tumbleseed is coming to the Switch on May 2nd. This is a little indie game. The main reason I put this game on the list is because I looked at Nintendo's description and it was, no joke, two sentences.
Mm.
And then the rest of the page was blank. So I thought that might have been kind
of
fun. So
either they're not invested in this game at all,
they
think two sentences are going to sell.
Right.
It's just good. They got a new writing crew.
Yeah.
And they have full faith in them. And
I mean, I didn't look
at... Like, guys, this is bullet points. You're just repeating what you said.
That would be tragic. I actually didn't look... I didn't look at the descriptions for some of these other games. I mean, now I'm kind of worried that they've toned down their descriptions. They're ruining the podcast.
There's a reason why it's only two sentences long, because they got rid of the bullet points.
Their description is the only reason we do an official show anymore. To read that.
Guy breathlessly bursts into the boardroom. He's like, they're making fun of us online. We gotta let this shit out.
So Tumbleseed is a little dual stick, procedurally generated... They describe it as a roguelike game. It's this platform and it's moving up a mountain and you have to... You use the two sticks to tilt the platform and you have to get the seed up the mountain. I don't think you have any direct control over the seed. There is some sort of combat they describe, like building weapons, but it has nice, bright, colorful graphics. It looks really pretty. But, I mean, this one's real low on the list. This is probably a hard pass just because I got so much other stuff.
So is there two sentences that they write?
Probably. That's
a hard pass.
That's Nintendo's description. Guys, this game is coming out, but you know what? Don't even worry about it. You know why? Because Minecraft is coming to the Switch on May 11th. That's why.
Oh, wow.
And we talked about this on the mini show. I mean, it's Minecraft.
Do you want to take guesses about how well do we think that game's going to do?
Like how many copies we think it will sell? Or
like it just
My nephew plays it on an iPad. I imagine this game is going to be... selling like fucking gangbusters.
Well, this game is on every goddamn platform.
Yeah, I know, but everybody's already had the game. Why would they also buy it for the Switch? Because they can take it with them?
That's the thing. And I'm going to give this sales pitch as someone who is definitely not going to buy the fucking game.
Okay, here we go.
Outside of the Vita, which nobody fucking owns, there...
Besides psychopaths.
Right. This is a psychopath who buy a fuck ton of games. People who own Vita like buy every goddamn game
for
it.
They're insane.
Yeah. That is the only other way to play this game portably with buttons. So, you know, you could play on an iPad. Sure.
I watched my nephew play it, and I was immediately infuriated by the layout of the controls.
Yeah.
I'm, like, shocked that he's intentionally doing such an I think he used the word obtuse earlier. It's the perfect way to define how you're trying to navigate your way through this shit.
I've watched my nephew play this as well. It baffles my mind how he can... do this shit.
You're just a crap screen. There's
like
a keyboard and a mouse, and you're gonna realize that you have just wasted so much time.
Right. I mean, let's
try to get used to this.
Well, let's put it this way: he's playing games with a touchscreen that are ideally not played with a touchscreen. He's gonna discover one day that analog sticks and buttons are better ways to interact with these things.
He's gonna play the game on a touchpad computer.
We played Home Alone 2. So we all make mistakes as children. So, just sticking up for your nephew there a little bit.
Yeah, you know, a lot of cheap shots get thrown at him. I want you to know he's a fucking class act.
Does he listen to the show? Does he download?
Oh, no, he can't because of the language and because Wes is such a racist.
Wes's
casual racism really scares away the fans. I'll let you know.
Oh, is that why we're not so successful?
Yeah.
Oh, that's why I don't have a Patreon. Alright, so Fire Emblem Shadows of Valentia is coming to the 3DS May 19th, and this will be the first 3DS game I buy since Pokemon, which is going to feel real good.
Whoa.
What was
that?
what John just did?
Hang on, let's see if I can do it the way you did it.
Whoa! Yeah.
like, no, I can't.
It's getting progressively worse as we go.
I wasn't trying to do anything. That came off a little bit like Professor Frank.
Maybe. But anyway, this is Fire Emblem. We all know what Fire Emblem is at this point. Good news, this game will probably not feature face touching.
Time out. Hold on. Yes. I just placed that laugh. The episode where Fry and Amy are stuck Mars, and that guy's walking up to the fog window, hello! Hello! And they're just like playing Go Fish or something. It's like, no. I just placed it.
That's good. So no face touching.
I'll never make a noise again, you guys. I'm sorry.
Also no incestuous relationships and Fire Emblem Echoes.
All right, well, that'll be fun.
There are some weird things going on with this game, like changes to the battle systems. Like, from what I'm hearing and reading, there is no weapon triangle, which is very strange.
It's a first-person shooter now.
Right.
Wait, you are saying, though, that like that was a big thing about the game, though, is right? That axes beat...
Lances beat swords, beat axes, yeah.
You've played the game.
He was a different face touching.
Yeah.
He was just super face touching. Blowing to that microphone.
Yeah, I was a little alarmed. I thought I was building a castle and trying to have sex with a sibling. And then suddenly I'm expected to command an army? What the fuck is this? Sister, I've just had sex with this woman. Come in and explain why I'm fighting.
There's also some changes to the game. There are spots where you can revive allies. I don't assume this is going to be, like, after every battle, because that's what casual mode is for, but there are places within these dungeons that we've talked about. You enter, like, these 3D polygonal dungeons, and you explore around and get into battles in there. So this is definitely a weird departure, which seems to be retaining a lot of the elements from the game that inspired it. Like, this is a remake of Fire Emblem Gaiden on the NES, which, like a lot of other NES games, it's the second installment in the series, so they just got real fucking weird with it. But you can't go wrong with more Fire Emblem, so I'm going to get it. There's another strategy RPG coming to the Switch this time on May 23rd. It's Disgaea 5 Complete. We talked a little bit about this one.
Oh, look at that. Disgaea.
Yeah.
This is a very odd game, because it looks really good, but I haven't seen much of it.
It's a bit more like a Tactics Advance, I would say, than a Fire Emblem, because you get more into character customization and character classes than you do with a Fire Emblem. Usually, like Fire Emblem, if you're a Cavalier, you're going to stay that way until you're a Paladin. Even in Fire Emblem games where they give you the option to switch over.
Yeah, like, what was it, Shadow Dragon?
Yeah, where you can just kind of switch people whenever you felt like it.
Yeah.
But Disgaea, and I've had real limited experience with Disgaea, so I'm not exactly sure how it works, but I think there's also things like in Tactics Advance, like skills, where if you're mastering certain classes or dabbling certain classes, you're able to carry skills over from class to class.
That's what you do.
Character. Yeah.
You get your double wield with the ninja and then switch you over to paladin, so you're carrying around two giant claymores.
You're double wielding two-hand weapons, yeah.
But, you know, I remember... My experience with this game was you getting it through
Gamefly?
Yeah, I think this was with your Gamefly brief, like back when you had, back when I lived here. Long time ago.
I think, and that's the only time I've ever played Disgaea as well, because...
But it looked good. Like, I was very interested when you were playing this game. I was like, this is very random. What the hell is this thing?
Yeah, it's a cool looking game. I think I got a little bit bogged down because you can get so deep into the minutia that playing in front of a TV got a little bit tiring. I think this game is going to work a lot better in handheld mode.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the primary way I'm going to be playing it. But then the last game coming out in May, this one's out on May 26th, it is Ultra Street Fighter 2, The Final Challengers. It's the last one you get to Switch, right, Ryan?
Exactly.
On that day,
you know it.
May 26th.
Well, they said The Final Challengers, so this is it.
Yeah, this is it for Street Fighter 2.
They're going to be done with this.
Then they're going to start iterating on Street Fighter 3.
Yes. The coffin is lowered into the earth, and they're going to put a couple of, piles of dirt on it.
Until Disney releases it again in, 4 years.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. So, I love Street Fighter 2. It's one of my favorite games.
I think they have some new characters. I'm not sure if it goes beyond what they've already announced. Like, it compiles all of the characters from the different versions of Street Fighter 2, but then you also get Evil Ryu, Which, nice. I mean, okay. Why wouldn't you?
And you get, like, another person, right?
Violent Ken.
You get just Cammy's ass.
that's the playable character.
Yeah, no, it's her ass atop Chun-Li's legs. And that's all you have to fight with.
I'd pay, like, $2 for that DLC.
Yeah, might as well.
Fine with that.
And then there's the two-on-one mode.
Oh, that's right! We talked about that a little bit on the middle of the show. Yeah, there's a mode where you can play through. I think you play through
an arcade mode. Giant evil Ken, and then it's two on one.
I think you actually play through like an arcade mode, but it's a cooperative where you and player two plays different characters, and you're fighting one opponent.
That's pretty cool. That sounds like a lot of fun.
You share a health bar, but yeah, that'd be totally great. I'll just like sit back and suppress with some yoga fires while you do the heavy lifting.
Nice.
And then you play with me and we lose because, you know, I'm just in the front.
Because for some reason you damage yourself.
No, I mean, the game is just Vega. Just cross-ups and throws. That's all I do. Yeah. I don't even try to punch. Just throws. I'm not kidding. That is really, like, the most fun way to play now for me. Like, I haven't played just too much Street Fighter 2. The thing that really gets me going and just feels good when I'm playing is doing asshole cross-ups into Vega's throws, which are absurdly overpowered. As I'm landing their like near lifeless body into the ground, I'm charging up bounce off the wall back into the blades, and I'm just stun them, and then I throw them again.
You're a bad man.
You're a terrible person. It's great. So much fun. It's cool. Wonderful.
Well, that's all the games I wanted to talk about coming out on the Switch and 3DS in May. Oh shit! Actually, I think there's a Wii U game coming out in May. I think Darksiders War Mastered Edition is coming to the Wii U.
Really?
Yeah, that came out on the other systems like back in November, and they're still bringing it to the Switch.
You haven't played Darksiders 1, you've only played 2, right?
Exactly, yeah. And War Mastered Edition is coming out at a budget price. I mean, I got too much other stuff I'm not going to be able to get.
Darksiders 1 was better. It was so good. I mean, it wasn't as long and tedious as 2 got.
I believe you. Like, I'll get it one day, but we've been playing Fire Emblem. I don't have time for Darksiders.
Oh, man.
I got faces to touch. Gosh. But I think we're nearing the end here.
I got one Nintendo game to talk about.
What you got?
It actually came out May in 1996, though.
Go on.
It's called Advance Wars.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds terrible.
You guys haven't talked about it, have you?
Yes, I have, actually, yeah.
Oh, dick.
1998. It came out in 1998.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Wait, well, you're jumping ahead, then.
We're talking about this like Super Famicom, I jumped ahead a little bit. Oh, we're not going to talk about Advance Wars like Super Famicom Wars in 19 was, like 2
I
years
from now. Ran into man, I had 20 pages in notes.
Did you really?
No,
I get the fuck out of here.
I kind of just wanted to talk about it a little bit. What was your take on it?
I
didn't listen to it.
I wish there was a fan translation, really, because then I could actually like get into the game and really experience it rather than just kind of watch other people. I think like.
Your Spanish Pokemon equivalent.
Right. I will take the game in Spanish. At least I'm able to like figure things out a little bit.
Yeah.
If it's in Spanish. But I talked a little bit about the Let's Plays. Like there's a couple of Let's Plays on YouTube and neither of them are very good. And the only other information I could find about like, differences between like the Super Famicom game and other versions of the game are people's like fan reviews that they wrote on GameFAQs. So I'm trying to like
it's like this kanji symbol means this or something? Or
they're talking about like, well, this unit is in this game but not in other ones, and this is vaguely what it does.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to like read as many fan reviews as I can just to sort of verify information as best as possible.
Yeah. Well, the numbers are still the same, right? So that should tell you. Sure. It's like 1,000 is an infantry and 10,000 is a mech.
Yeah, the prices are the same. Like, you can actually see the prices using Arabic numerals. But one thing that I did find kind of funny was that you don't see the unit's HP on the grid. So if you forget how much HP your opponent has, then you might be putting yourself in a bad situation.
Hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting take on the series. It's an interesting like early entry in the series because you don't have that campaign mode, so you don't have that tutorial to show you how to play the game and what different units are going to do. It's just, here's your levels, here's your commanding officers that you can use, have at it, and by the way, you can build the best shit you can possibly get. from some of the stuff that I was reading from user reviews is that the AI feels very unbalanced. And from what I was watching on some YouTube videos, it seems that a lot of times when you're starting up a map, the AI has considerably more bases and buildings captured already. So you're always starting from behind.
Oh, okay. Well, that's something that they did a good job of splitting up later on between, like, campaign, war room, and versus. Where campaign is the actual story. War room is set up maps.
Yeah.
That could, like, ones that are intentionally designed to put you at a disadvantage. And then versus is just, like, all of the maps, but they're evenly distributed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no one's at an extreme advantage one way or another.
And one of these days we'll have to get in really deep about the GBA and the DS games, and Wes is playing Pokemon Go.
I just thought I'd bring it out real quick, sorry.
That's great. Yeah, I feel like that's such a fucking underutilized property. Like, as much as I love Advance Wars, I don't know why.
It's been almost 10 years since. Well,
I why do they dedicate it to the DS? It's a great game to carry around with you and do stuff on, but, like, I want to play it. Like, I want like a big grand version of this game.
Oh, maybe on the Switch. And I did talk a little bit on the Super Nintendo show. They did bring it back to consoles because it started on the Famicom, the NES, and it was on the Super Famicom. But then most of the other entries are portable, except there was a GameCube game called Battalion Wars and a Wii sequel, Battalion Wars 2. But they weren't really... They weren't turn-taking strategy games. They were strategy games, and you still have, like, your unit alignments and your unit types, and this unit is going to be good against that one, and so on and so forth. It took on a lot of those aspects of Advance Wars, but it was all in real time. So it had, like, the same whimsical nature of Advance Wars. But it's definitely a different flavor. Because you're trying to manage groups of units and, like, command, like, okay, we'll need all my tanks to go over here. I need my infantry to attack this unit. I need my bazooka guys to take out that helicopter that's attacking us. So I think they did a little bit better of a job, as long as we're on this tangent, of, like, allowing you to manage your units in the Wii version. But still, it still would be really cool to get an Advance Wars games on the Switch so that you can carry it with you if you want, or you can play it on the TV. It'd be cool to see that again. Got anything else? Wes, you reading any X-Men? You borrowing all my books?
I borrowed those three books. I haven't gotten to them.
Unbelievable.
I'm trying to catch up on other books.
Unbelievable.
I'm sorry.
No. Brandon Sanderson did not write the X-Men.
By the next mini show, I will have read them.
I don't believe you.
Maybe you should discuss them on my mini show, and it'll just become an X-Men show again. That's what's going
to
happen.
That's what you should do. The next ones you give to him, just, like, cross out the names of your writers and just, like, Brandon Sanderson.
There you go. Oh, my God.
Yeah, Blood and Thunder. Enjoy this one.
How are you, Ryan? Anything,
You gave me an awesome volume of, I guess, Chris Claremont's first real run at the X-Men.
Yeah, it was X-Men Epic Collection. It's volume 3, and it starts with Giant Size X-Men and covers, like, I think up to issue 110.
Yeah.
So I think that might take you through the Phoenix Saga, as they called it, and the animated show. I don't think it takes it to Dark Phoenix yet, though.
Yeah. So, and thank you for lending that to me. Oh, it looks amazing, too. Mm-hmm. Like, I found a pretty good website that was just putting up scans of it, but it's not the way to do it. It really isn't. Even if you have, an iPad, or if you're playing it on or reading it on a tablet, it's just not good. Mm-hmm. It's best to, like, have the tangible medium in front of you that you can flip back and forth and really, like, get your eyeball into it and see all of the detail.
Yeah, like I...
Because even though these are older, these are really, like, older in the grand scheme of the X-Men and a lot of the more stylized and detailed stuff you see now, like, there's still incredible detail. Like, it's packed into every single frame.
Yeah. Like, the stuff from the 60s, that art has not nearly aged as well as stuff
that gets into I feel like this is really modern stuff. Mm-hmm. It feels like when I'm looking at it.
Right. It has a lot of, like, modern sensibilities. But, like, I read a lot of the earlier stuff online through Marvel Unlimited. It's a little subscription you can get through Marvel and have access to all these back issues online. But I end up reading, like, a lot on a tablet or a phone. And they have, like, a really cool thing where it's called Smart Panel, where it's just the individual panels are blown up larger and you just read them, like, a panel at a time.
Oh, that's really cool.
But it still is really cool to have that tangible book to where you can see how all the panels relate to each other. And, like, kind of, like, how they're all their set up like that. I'm up to issue 160, 161, so...
Well, and for the most part, like, it seems a little corny at times.
Sure. Yeah, a little campy.
Yeah, it is a little campy, and it hasn't gotten really fucking weird, like I know a lot of these X-Men storylines tend to get, you know? I remember you describing the more messed up elements that happened with like Old Man Logan, and I'm like, really?
Oh yeah,
sure. This is where we're going.
Venom Tyrannosaurus. Yeah,
I really want to read that.
it's so goofy. It's so fun.
Yeah,
but like I actually read through. I've started reading through the X-Men. It's called New X-Men. It's the series that starts up in 2001, runs until I think about 2004 when Astonishing X-Men picks up. But this one was by a guy, Grant Morrison, who does, as I understand, does mostly writing for DC. But he came over and did a run of X-Men. And first off, let's just say real quick, I don't really like the art. There's a grotesqueness to it, especially like character faces where everyone looks a little bit haggard. And I'll show you guys when we're done here in just a second. But as far as the story goes, he like introduces some things like secondary mutations that have stuck around in the X-Men canon. He was the guy who changed Beast into like Lion Beast.
Mm-hmm.
I like this series because he does some interesting things, especially with this character Zorn. But this series starts up with the Genosha massacre, where...
Mm-hmm.
The character that you saw in Astonishing, yes, yeah. Cassandra Nova,
yep,
sends sentinels to Genosha where 16 million mutants are living. He just fucking kills them all. Like, Emma Frost survives and maybe a couple others survive. And this is where Emma Frost joins up with the X-Men.
And that's where also she gets her secondary mutation.
Right. And also when she begins her psychic love affair with Cyclops.
Well, you know.
Who is a cheating dick. But there's this really great scene when Jean finds out. She like catches them in their mind bedroom, and she just like goes full Phoenix. First of all, like her like Scott's like, wait, I can explain, and and she's like, you shut up, and like he disappears. Like she kicks him out of Emma's mind. It's like, okay, Emma Frost, now I'm just gonna rip you apart, and like takes her through all like these painful memories of her past and just breaks her down psychically. Like,
oh god,
Jean gets ruthless, and it's great.
And then, you know, Cyclops eventually becomes like one of the most hated characters.
Well, you say that. I like Cyclops.
I do too.
Going into the more modern stuff, which is funny because, you know, as a kid and like in like the 90s and stuff, nobody liked Cyclops. He wasn't anybody's favorite.
I mean, the way that they portrayed him, you know, when we were kids and everything like that, especially on the TV show, it's like, all right, you can shoot a laser beam out of his eye. Oh, look, it's not effective again. Like, it really wasn't that big of a deal. But then you get to the comics and start reading this, you're like, holy shit, this is actually kind of terrifying what this guy can do.
Yeah, and he has this brilliant tactical mind. Like, he's very good at just devising strategies to take down enemies.
Well, you described him as... You said he took a heel turn in, like, the vein of Walter White.
Oh, yeah.
Which is... You love Walter White in spite of how insane he is.
He's captivated. Like, it is such an interesting... Like, for both Walter White and Cyclops, it's such an interesting arc of the character, how you... They keep on spiraling downwards, and you get to see like just how despicable they can become before you stop rooting for them. Because, you know, as like we're getting to the end of Breaking Bad, I was rooting for Hank a little bit. Like, just a little. Kind of wanted...
Yeah, no, even like as he's laying there, having been shot, and the camera is going up away from him, in my heart of hearts, I was like, he's going to be okay.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, it's true. That's probably the most villainous person I've ever rooted for.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I don't think Cyclops ever really goes full villain. Like, I'll stand up for Cyclops a little bit. Like, he still had...
Deeply flawed.
He still had mutant kind's best interests at heart. He just was willing to...
But also wanted to get his dick wet.
he just became less and less inclined to take... humanity into consideration when he was thinking about how
he became more and more Magneto.
he was all about
if you see 16 million of your own kind die, I'm sure that's gonna fuck you up the way it fucked up Magneto.
He went through like 16 million of his own kind died, House of M, where Scarlet Witch was just like, fucking no more mutants. So there were only 198 of them left in existence. You went through Messiah Complex, where there was this big war about mutants actually being born again. And just like the events of Schism, when Sentinel programs started to be resurrected. So like, hey, now humans are going to build these giant robots to come fucking murder you again. He's been on top of the
Terrigen Cloud that's literally killing everybody off.
The Terrigen Mist. Yeah, that's where he finally bought it. So like, between 2001 and now, things were real shitty for mutants. And he was there.
You feel like we're due for a constructive summer here? Like,
yes.
Things are going to be okay for mutants. Yeah. Just maybe like just write a year's worth of nothing.
Regenesis has started. Like, new issues of X-Men have started coming out. And it seems to be a bit brighter of a future for mutants. I really think they're at their best, though, when things are shitty, though.
Yeah.
So I hope things get shitty again real soon. But like Magneto, for a while, was about a mutant superiority at the expense of humanity. Like, humanity's in the past, they need to go. It's all about mutants now. Whereas Cyclops, like, there was still that chance for coexistence, but survival was his number one priority.
Yeah. What does anyway, he hear about Magneto being like Hydra?
No, Magneto actually continuing forward, he's
something like
no,
this.
No, get this. The original five X-Men. We talked before about
like a new thing they're doing. How like Captain America?
Shut up. No, Captain America is the Hydra agent. Oh. So we talked before about how the original five X-Men came to the future and were to try to prevent themselves from becoming the adult versions of themselves. They stuck around in the future. They never went back to the past. So in the new run of X-Men, they're all back on a team together. They got split up a little bit. Jean was on a different team. But now all five are back together. Jean is leading the team, but Magneto is sort of mentoring them. So the original five from the past who had to deal with Magneto being all homicidal are now led by Magneto, which is kind of funny. It's a fun dichotomy that they got going on there.
Yeah.
But anyway, we've been going on for long enough. I think I say we close it out here. Anything else?
I finally brought the N64 cartridge for you.
Yeah, I saw that in there. Thank you very much.
And I also brought Pokemon Stadium for you to try out.
Yes, bueno.
As the attachment that goes on the back of the N64 controller, so you can plug in your old Boy cartridge.
Nice.
With my Pokemon Yellow still in it.
I saw that. Yeah, thank you so much.
We should talk about Pokemon Stadium on the next Pokemon show, which is the next show.
Mm-hmm. Is that coming up?
The Pokemon show?
No, on the next Pokemon show, we were going to discuss this.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
We should do that.
Just bring your N64 or replace the Pokemon Stadium.
That's like a week away.
I was looking back at that. Yeah, it's like a week away. We'll do it next week.
Yeah. Sounds like fun.
But also, some I was thinking about. But you go first.
I was looking back at this game, and I started thinking more on it. I was like, there's actually a little more to this game than I remember. Like, there's like little side games you can do. Mm-hmm. There's like games where you can do battles with restricted level requirements and like,
you can touch their faces?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then there's like the straight skirmish thing where you can just make a team of whoever you want. It's great. It's a great little game.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. We'll see.
Just bring your N64 and we'll play some of that next week.
Mm-hmm. Cool, then.
It'd be great.
So the Pokemon show is next. I actually had another idea. Rather than doing through another run, which I finished my Alolan run. Anybody else?
No. Sorry.
No. Okay.
I don't think my eggs have hatched yet.
Okay. I thought of another idea. Rather than doing another run through of a game, like we can continue ranking if you feel like it, but I thought it might also be kind of fun, and we don't have to do this for next week.
Hmm.
This can be a little way off. We make teams for each other, like some sort of theme team, and rather than running through the game with it, what we have to do is do like an Elite Four title defense in Sun Moon with that team, and then maybe fight a few online battles with the teams that we have made for each other.
Let's see how that goes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
I got a bug team going.
Oh,
so
boy.
You're welcome, whoever gets that one. But that'll be a conversation for next week. That's the end of this show.
All right.
Till next time, everybody.
So long. Leap.